We've been listening to The Tale of the Bird.
Step right up, balloons.
And we listened to the meadow section. I think now it's getting into the circus section. I hope you guys enjoyed that wonderful story. I hope you appreciate my creative liberties and adding some effects to the voices. I'm kind of freaking myself out in the station here. Like, I'm looking around. It's kind of scary with this kind of weird story playing. But I think it sets the tone because it is now 3 a.m. This next song I'm going to play is an album that I think my friend has been looking for in the station. It's Stan Getz. The album is called Children of the World. And the song that I'm going to play on it is Children of the World. I've never listened to this in my life, so let's give it a go. Hopefully we can get into more jazz stuff as the night drags on.
Mean bird, little bird, his tree stripping his tree. With a pert nest out of his nest. Thank you.
That was Children of the World from Stan Getz. Or Yetz? No, Getz. Stan Getz. It is 3 a.m. currently. You're tuned into 90.1 WVFM Burlington. 3 a.m. such an odd time. Because it's like between sleeping and waking up. I don't think I've ever woken up at 3 a.m. I feel like I'm more on the I'm still awake because I haven't slept today type side of 3 a.m. I don't know about you guys. But I think it's time to take a break from this music and listen to me talk. This is going to be a short message about autocorrect. Just watching Game of Throbs. I start my job at Five Guys on Friday. Just picked up my unicorn. I'm really feeling the Monday blues. I'm loving SZA's new song, Love Galore, with Travis Scott. These are a few examples of autocorrections that affect people's lives daily. Don't let autocorrect ruin your relationships, get you fired, or make things awkward between you and your parents. If autocorrect affects you or anyone you know, you're not alone. The WRV Autocorrect DJ experts are here to help. Our best advice to get over your autocorrect encounters is to pay attention, proofread, and double check. Symptoms of proofreading include 1. Avoiding sounding like a fool. Sending the right information to the right person. Correctly texting what you want to say and avoiding the most embarrassing moment of your life. You're not alone in this problem. No. Autocorrect affects every person you see. Reach out to others who have experienced the same unfortunate thing and tell them, here, at 90.1 WREV FM Burlington, you have the best advice for getting over autocorrect. From the DJs here at WREV FM Burlington, have a great day and don't forget to double check your next test. Text. Okay, I think they need to put autocorrect on my voice, because... but I think the next thing that we're going to play is some more spoken word stuff. Because I think it's really interesting, and I don't think it gets played enough in the station, and we have an interesting section of it. So, this story looks interesting. It's an excerpt from the book Wild Animals I Have Known. This is Lobo and Silver Spot, read by Ed Begley. You guys can't see the cover because you're listening to me talk, but it's a bunch of wolves, so I'm guessing Lobo and Silver Spot are wolves. I'm going to read a little bit of the back to you, a little bit of a description. Lobo, the king of Kurumpa, and Silver Spot are the first two stories in Ernest Thompson Seton's Wild Animals I've Known, a book published as long ago as October 20th, 1898. And as fresh and exciting today as it was then. Readers in 1898 devoured the first edition with the avidity of a starving wolf. You know what? I've changed my mind. I don't think we have to listen to the description on the back, but I think we should listen to it at least for a little bit. I'm going to play the side that's labeled Lobo, so stay tuned.
Kurumpa is a vast cattle range in northern New Mexico. It is a land of rich pastures and teeming flocks and herds, a land of rolling mesas and precious running waters that at length unite in the Kurumpa River, from which the whole region is named. And the king, whose despotic power was felt over its entire extent, was an old gray wolf. Old Lobo, or the king, as the Mexicans called him, was the gigantic leader of a remarkable pack of gray wolves that had ravaged the Kurumpa Valley for a number of years. All the shepherds and ranchmen knew him well, and wherever he appeared with his trusty band, terror reigned supreme among the cattle, and wrath and despair among their owners. Old Lobo was a giant among wolves, and was cunning and strong in proportion to his size. His voice at night was well known and easily distinguished from that of any of his fellows. An ordinary wolf might howl half the night about the herdsman's bivouac without attracting more than a passing notice. But when the deep roar of the old king came booming down the canyon, the watcher bestirred himself and prepared to learn in the morning that fresh and serious inroads had been made among the herds. Old Lobo's band was but a small one. This I never quite understood, for usually, when a wolf rises to the position and power that he had, he attracts a numerous following. It may be that he had as many as he desired, or perhaps his ferocious temper prevented the increase of his pack. Certain it is that Lobo had only 5 followers during the latter part of his reign. Each of these, however, was a wolf of renown. Most of them were above the ordinary size. One in particular, the second in command, was a veritable giant. But even he was far below the leader in size and prowess. Several of the band, besides the 2 leaders, were especially noted. One of those was a beautiful white wolf that the Mexicans called Blanca. This was supposed to be a female, possibly Lobo's mate. Another was a yellow wolf of remarkable swiftness, which, according to current stories, had on several occasions captured an antelope for the pack. There was not a stockman on the Corumpa who would not readily have given the value of many steers for the scalp of any one of Lobo's band. But they seemed to possess charmed lives and defied all manner of devices to kill them. They scorned all hunters, derided all poisons, and continued for at least 5 years to exact their tribute from the Corumpa ranchers to the extent, many said, of a cow each day. According to this estimate, therefore, the band had killed more than 2,000 of the finest stock. For, as was only too well known, they selected the best in every instance. The old idea that a wolf was constantly in a starving state, and therefore ready to eat anything, was as far as possible from the truth in this case, for these freebooters were always sleek and well-conditioned, and were, in fact, most fastidious about what they ate. Any animal that had died from natural causes, or that was diseased or tainted, they would not touch. And they even rejected anything that had been killed by the stockmen. Their choice and daily food was the tenderer part of a freshly killed yearling heifer. An old bull or cow they disdained, and though they occasionally took a young calf or colt, it was quite clear that veal or horse flesh was not their favorite diet. It was also known that they were not fond of mutton, although they often amused themselves by killing sheep. One night in November 1893, Blanca and the yellow wolf killed 250 sheep, apparently for the fun of it, and did not eat an ounce of their flesh. Many new devices for their extinction were tried each year, but still they lived and throve in spite of all the efforts of their foes. A great price was set on Lobo's head, and in consequence, poison in a score of subtle forms was put out for him. But he never failed to detect and avoid it.
Became jealous.
One thing only.
First, he tried to have them murdered. And when this plan failed, he managed to get them exiled from the kingdom for 12 years. When the period of exile was over at last, Yudhisthira, the eldest of the Pandavas, asked for the return of their land. But Duryodhana refused. Yudhisthira said he would be content with just one village for himself and for each of his brothers. But Duryodhana, in the insanity of his greed, would not agree even to this. The older members of the family tried to arbitrate and failed, so war became inevitable. Neighboring kings were drawn into the quarrel until the whole of India was involved. Both sides wanted Krishna's aid, and to both Krishna offered the same choice. Either you can have the help of my kinsmen, the Vrishnis, in the battle, he told them, or you can have me alone, but I shall take no part in the fighting. Duryodhana chose the Vrishnis. Arjuna, the third of the Pandavas and their commander-in-chief, preferred to take Krishna himself as his personal charioteer. The battle was fought on the plain of Kurukshetra, a sacred place of pilgrimage, and it was here, just before the armies engaged, that Krishna and Arjuna had the conversation which is recorded in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita dialogue, there are four speakers: King Dhritarashtra, Sanjaya, Arjuna, and Krishna. Dhritarashtra is blind. The sage Vyasa, who is traditionally supposed to be the author of the Gita, offers to restore his sight in order that he may watch the battle of Kurukshetra. But Dhritarashtra refuses because he cannot bear to see his kinsman killed. So Vyasa confers the psychic powers of clairvoyance and clairaudience upon Sanjaya, who is Dhritarashtra's minister and charioteer. As they sit together in the palace, Sanjaya describes to his master everything he sees and hears on the distant battlefield, and through his mouth the words of Krishna and Arjuna are mediumistically reported. Occasionally, he pauses in his report to add descriptive remarks of his own. Sri Krishna, Sri is a title of reverence, such as Lord, has been called the Christ of India. The Gita is not primarily concerned with Krishna as an individual, but with his aspect as Brahman or Atman, or the ultimate reality. When Krishna addresses Arjuna, he sometimes speaks as an individual, but often as God himself. Arjuna, in his attitude to Krishna, also expresses this dual relationship. Krishna is the divine incarnation of Vishnu. Thank you.
favorite kind of music.
See this show, come to have a good time. They're somebody's kids. They're somebody's decent kids, probably, that was raised in a decent home. If they wanna pay their money and come out and jump around and scream and yell, it's their business. They'll grow up someday and grow out of that. I'll say this, and I'd like to add it to what I just got through saying about, as a rule, most of the adults are real nice. They're understanding. I've had them come around to me with the hundreds and say, I don't personally like your kind of music, but my children like it, and so on. And if they like it, well, I hadn't got any kick about it, because when I was young, I liked the Charleston. I liked the Foxtrot. I liked this and that. They're adults with a little intelligence. I mean, you know, that they don't run the people in the ground for having a nice time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to the clipping. Where did you get the name Elvis the Pelvis?
From somebody just like the character that's writing this article here.
Do you have any idea who?
No, sir, I wish I knew. I don't know. Of course, I don't like to be called Elvis the Pelvis, but, I mean, it's one of the most childish expressions I've ever heard coming from an adult. Elvis the Pelvis, but if they want to call me that, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it, so I just have to accept it. Uh-huh. It's like you got to accept the good with the bad with the good.
Okay. Do you recall the first time you sang in public? You remember when the first time you
sang in public? Yes, sir. It was back when I was about 10, 11 year old. I was in an amateur program in a fair.
And did you use a lot of gyrations then?
Well, I wasn't doing the type of songs I'm doing now.
Oh.
Nobody knew what rock and roll was back in those days.
Well, when you hear rock and roll, it gets you on a fire, or?
Oh, not when I just hear it on the radio. When I'm doing it on the stage, you have to put on a show for people.
Yeah.
In other words, people can buy your records and hear you sing, and they don't have to come out to hear you sing. You have to put on a show in order to draw a crowd.
Yeah.
If I just stood out there and sang and never moved a muscle, the people would say, well, my goodness, I can stay home and listen to his records.
That's right.
But you have to give them a show, something to talk about.
Uh-huh. I read a clipping somewhere where you were attributed as saying that it's a roller, 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 roller.
What do you think of yourself?
I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon.
What do you think of yourself as?
You mean as an entertainer or as an individual or what?
Both.
Well, I can sum it up fairly easily. I have a lot that I'd like to do, a lot that I'd like to accomplish in time, but I feel that it takes time to accomplish certain things. You can't overstep your bounds. I'd like to improve in an awful lot of ways, you know, is for one thing, the acting thing. And naturally, I try to get better songs and sing a little better, things like that. What do I look at myself as? Not really playing everything down, but as a human being, really, who's been extremely fortunate in so many ways. Although I have had and still have some very lonely and, you know, there are times when I really don't know. It feels like I don't know what I'm going to do next. But I've experienced a lot of the different phases in life. I've experienced happiness and loneliness, the wealthy side of life, the average side of life, you know, not having anything, but not knowing what it's like to have anything. So, and tragedy. Like losing my mother while I was in the Army. And although I think that things like that, as tragic as they are, tend to make you a little better human being, because you learn more about yourself. It gives you a better understanding of yourself as well as other people. And it can only help.
Do you enjoy your work?
I like the business I'm in. I like to entertain people. The money or the financial end of it is not the greatest aspect as far as I'm concerned. It can't be, because if it was, it would show. And I wouldn't care about a performance that I gave. Of course, I mean, it's great that you can get in a position to have.
Pretend that I was a boy instrument, was I sad?
anything differently?
If I had to entertain with one?
Well, if you were starting out now and playing the guitar, would you do anything different?
I would make it a point to do something, do a certain thing. I've got to do just like I've always done, going by impulse and just what I feel on the spur of the
moment. So, excuse me, we just heard Radiohead. This is one of my favorite albums. It's actually one that I donated to the station, but I think I played 3 songs off of it.
I wouldn't like to stay in the same vein.
The one that we just listened to was Jigsaw Falling Into Place. And I've kind of been putting it between the album that's playing right now, which is an interview of Elvis. I believe this interview was from 1960 or 1961. But I thought it was interesting because why do we have that in the station? And I don't think anyone's going to play that vinyl anytime soon, so I thought I'd give it some spotlight and throw some reverb on it. Because it's 3:39, I mean, why not in the morning? The one we played before that, off the Radiohead album, was Weird Fishes Arpeggio, which is really good. And then we started that Radiohead section off with Nude, which I wouldn't usually be able to play because it charted on the Billboard Top 100, but today's an exception with Vinylathon and such. Speaking of Vinylathon, we only have 2 more hours. DJ Abby E is going to come in 20 minutes, hopefully. Hopefully I can get some sleep. And she will finish the 46th and 47th hour. 47th and the 48th hour of Vinylathon. And then before that, I played an excerpt from the Bhagavad Gita. Sorry, that one always trips me up. Just because I thought that was interesting that we had that, and I thought it could add to the ethereal vibe with some reverb thrown on it. So that was really fun. And before that was the Lobo and Silver Spot story that we listened to for a little bit, but I got a little bit tired of it. It wasn't as interesting as I thought it was going to be. Besides, I don't need a bedtime story right now. I'm about to fall asleep myself. Congratulations for making it to 3:40 a.m., anyone who's still up. And congratulations if you've just woken up, because that's very impressive. This next song that I'm going to cue up in a second is from John Coltrane. This one is called Visitation, which I thought was interesting because it's kind of scary, and just the name Visitation gives me bad vibes, but it is 3:40, so such bad vibes are totally welcome at this time. Sorry, that was Elvis. So I'll throw that on momentarily.
Thank you. Everyone that reaches you?
Everyone that gets to come out, I always do.
Okay. sometimes you seem to disregard the protection given you by people in the theaters and the ushers and so forth, and maybe shake hands with someone and you reach over the rail or something like that, or you open the window when you're riding in a car when you know it shouldn't. Why do you do that?
Because I hate to, and I would, if it wasn't for getting mobbed and maybe clothes torn off, stuff like that, I would go right out in the middle of those people. I hate to turn anybody down in the photograph. Bob's pictures won't be talking about it. Show business.
What do you think your greatest value has been to him? What has been your?
I think my experience and.
We just listened to "Foreshadowed" from Brian Eno. That's off the album "The Pearl." Been playing more Elvis Presley on top because why not? It is almost 4 a.m. on this beautiful Monday morning. I can almost hear the birds singing from here. I'm going to read you guys a short message before I sign off for the night in a little bit. Hopefully Abby E is coming. Oh my god, I see her. She's running. I'm going to read you a quick message about being patient. It seems we're all in a rush in all that we do. We rush to work, run to class, and go at 50 miles an hour to meet up with friends. It is time to take a step back and slow down. Give yourself a little more time before you head out to your destination. This will save you the stress of being on time and will make your day much happier. There's also a better chance that you will not forget anything that you need. Being in a rush does not get you anywhere much faster. Anyway, so give yourself an extra few minutes before you leave and have a great day. Have a great morning or night. It's nighttime for me. It might be somebody else's morning. This last song that we're going to play. Sorry, Elvis is still going on in the background. It's going to be Still Return off the same, you know, album, because it's already on. We might as well throw it on. I mean, it's one of the last songs I'll play. Elvis will be with us, of course, just to add to that ambient vibe. This is going to be Still Return from Brian Eno off the album The Pearl, and stay tuned for your next DJ and more crazy tracks to finish up Vinylathon 2026. To kick Elvis out, he was getting on my nerves, too much reverb. I really love mixing him into ambient stuff though, it's so fun. I might bring him back on the show, TBH. This next song that I'm gonna play is Boards of Canada. It's a classic. I've been kind of trying to avoid Boards of Canada because I know a lot of people probably have been playing this album over the course of Vinylathon. It's a popular album. We actually have two of these, a duplicate of the album Kids Have the Right to... Music Has the Right to Children. The song that I'm going to play right now is called Smoke's Quantity, and I'm playing it because it sounds familiar, which means I've listened to it before. And I think that's good. But yeah, this is going to be likely my last song before DJ Abby E comes on to finish up Vinylathon, which I'm so excited. It's been such a long process. I've played many hours on air this weekend, and I'm excited to go to bed and wake up, hopefully well rested, before class tomorrow. JK, that's today. I've been DJ Plast, DJ Cool Thing. This is my show, Plastic Special Hour. If you want to catch my real show, it's Thursdays 3 to 4. Hopefully I'll never do this 2 to 4 a.m. slot ever again. But this last song, as I finish up, is going to be Smoke's Quantity from Boards of Canada. And shout out Ben, my old roommate, for showing me this artist.